This is the Financial Exchange with Mike Armstrong and Barry Armstrong. Your exclusive look at business and financial news affecting your day, your city, your world. Stay informed and up to date about economic and market trends, plus breaking business news every day. This is the Financial Exchange with Mike Armstrong and Barry Armstrong.
So President Biden signed the $1.2 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill on Monday. And can you just imagine how much money is going to flow to the six New England states? It's got to be, I know Massachusetts is $9 billion. And I think we're about half of the New England, a little less than half the New England population. So I'm thinking it's like $20 billion between the six New England states.
Yeah, that should probably add up to the general ballpark.
It's amazing. It's a lot of money, long overdue in coming. You look at where that money's going to be spent. A lot of bridges and highways that are in poor condition. We can all attest to that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's one place where you can usually get agreement that, yeah, our roads
stuff
suck.
Falling apart.
Yeah.
So in terms of Massachusetts, here's what we are seeing is $4.2 billion for improving highways, $1.1 billion towards bridges, $2.5 billion towards public transportation, $1.1 billion for clean drinking water, $244 million for airport infrastructure, and $100 million for high-speed internet coverage. I don't know what part of the state still, probably somewhere in Western Massachusetts doesn't have high-speed internet. But that's where the breakdown is here in Massachusetts, and I would just generally apply those same percentages to other New England states on a smaller scale.
This money has to be spent within, what, a five-year period of time?
I don't know if it's... It does say that. I don't know if the bills need to be passed to start the construction or if it actually needs to be gone within 5 years. And
these aren't matching funds. These are just like, here's money to improve your roads.
So I do want to call out the scale and impact of money like this. And $9 billion is a lot of money by any stretch of the imagination. But recently, Green Line extension. You guys know what I'm talking about. It extended it from North Station through parts of Somerville. It was, you know, it was a big project, but it was basically connecting parts of the Green Line that already existed to new neighborhoods. Any idea on cost for that?
I have no idea.
$2.3
billion. Wow.
So I don't mean to diminish the impact of any of these dollars, but it's going to require, if you're going to actually make substantial changes to the problems we have with infrastructure here in New England, it's going to require matching funds from the state to actually pour a lot of investment into these areas. This will have a big impact, and I don't want to be driving on unsafe bridges and roads more than as much as anybody else does. But I just, $9 billion sounds like a ton of money on paper. It's going to require a lot if they're going to talk about doing any of the things. You know, this is not going to suddenly revolutionize, cross-state rail service on its own. You're not going to be able to jump on a train from Springfield and arrive in downtown Boston South Station in 90 minutes.
That's too bad. One thing that bothers me is that there's not a lot being spent on public transportation. And that is where, like, if you want to cut back down, if you're saying, well, we got to cut back on emissions, and if you drive around the New England region, traffic is horrendous.
Or if you just want to, spread some of the wealth in terms of home value prices across the state and, make it, like, I would love to live out in Worcester. It's not feasible because it's going to take me three times as long to get to my office. So it's just not doable. And a lot of people fall into that same camp, which is why you see, the 128 loop of Boston having some of the most ridiculous housing prices of anywhere in the country, is a large part due to poor public infrastructure. I think the spending on the highways, I agree with you. I would love to see more money spent on public transit, commuter rail, east-west rail, a lot of things to make it easier to live and work in Boston and live elsewhere. I think the spending on the highways and bridges is an acknowledgement of just how bad of a state those are in.
Yeah.
It's not, hey, we're trying to build new lanes on the highway. It's these things are literally crumbling underneath our vehicles. And if we don't inject this money into there, it's going to be safety problems. It is more my understanding of all of this than anything else.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. I would love to see more investment in commuter rail. I would love to see the idea that it costs me less to commute via commuter rail than it does to drive into the city, because right now it doesn't. It's preposterous that it's so expensive that I can drive into Boston, park, and leave for cheaper than I can, you know, travel on the commuter rail. Just doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Well, I don't know if you can park. Right? Anytime I go to a garage, it's like $25-$35.
Okay. So, it's close, but if you're looking at one of the, you know, further away commuter rail spots, mm-hmm. you're looking at least $10 each way.
Yeah.
You're looking at least $5 to park at the commuter rail station.
Wow.
So you're coming in on 93 compared to taking the commuter rail. And then you got to wait for the right train and hope to God it's not delayed or you don't miss
it.
There's not much of an incentive to do that.
Many of them are in a state of disrepair as well. Pfizer is licensing their promising COVID-19 pill to a UN-backed nonprofit. This is in an effort to, you know, quell the pandemic in parts of the world where they simply don't have the money for vaccines.
I think the money or the infrastructure. Yeah. In both cases, getting vaccines that need to be cooled to a low temperature and maintained and then transported to remote villages and things like that is just not feasible. And mm-hmm. so something like a pill that's more stable. And then also we probably need to acknowledge just the concern about taking an injection compared to a pill for no good reason whatsoever. It makes people, you know, pretty nervous. And so I think for a number of reasons, this is seen as a big opportunity, especially in places like sub-Saharan Africa, where infrastructure just isn't built out and getting vaccines to remote villages would be incredibly difficult. So, you know, across the developing world, I think this is a very big step. Do we ever even take this, something like this here in the United States? I don't know. Maybe not. It might just be something that's not as needed here in developed countries in the U.S. and Europe and is really specialized towards, you know, other places. So time will tell. I can't claim to have any expertise on the science behind it other than to say I see the need for it.
Yeah. The Epic CEO is blasting both Apple and Google, and he's calling for a single app store, as opposed to Google has their app store, Apple has their app store, and they're making tons of money. So it's hard to imagine that either of these companies would agree to merge, if you will.
So I've been on board with pretty much everything on the Epic CEO side of all of this. Up until this moment, mm-hmm. I think we're getting a little bit further away from the problems here. Tucker, I'd appreciate your opinion on this too. But yes, you do have a different app store for Google, for Apple, for Xbox, for Sony, for all of these different gaming systems. The rates that get charged if you're playing a game on a PC compared to your iPhone are completely different and have different rules. I don't really think the solution should be less competition in terms of app stores. Like, that seems to be going in a more heavily regulated, treating the app store as more of a utility than it is what it is today, which is a private marketplace among buyers and sellers. I think the problems with Apple is that they are taking a number of steps that are completely anti-competitive. They kicked Epic Games off of their system for allowing different payment methods. They have, you know, blocked apps that have not adhered to their pricing programs. And I think that is, by definition, anti-competitive. You know, you are a restrictive marketplace in the United States. You have probably half the market share out there. And so from that perspective, look, you're acting monopolistically. And for those reasons, you should stop.
Well, and
but is the answer creating one app store where now just Apple and Google can use the same, or are we going to talk about a hugely regulated new app store that has all these government set rates? I don't think that's the right move either.
No, I don't either. But the thing that occurred to me when you're thinking about it is you buy that iPhone. What's an iPhone cost now? $1,000?
Yeah.
Yep.
Between $700,000, somewhere in that range, depending on what you're getting.
But you have to go to the Apple App Store in order to buy any of your or download any of your apps, right?
You
even though you own that phone, mm-hmm. right? You paid cash for it or you bought it out on time. Regardless, you own it. Whereas if you have a car, you can go to any gas station you want. If you have a car, you can go to any repair shop you want.
Depends where you live. On the car side, right? Isn't that a huge thing that we're fighting over all across the country right now is the right to repair? you know, we could come up with a million of these comparisons. If I go to Whole Foods, should I be able to buy Market Basket brand groceries there? I mean, I think, you know, the comparisons there, I think, break down a little bit. I don't so much have a problem with Apple saying, no, if you want to download an application on this phone, mm-hmm. we want to be able to vet the security and ensure that you're not downloading a virus into the system. And you know what? We can complain about that and complain about the rates and complain about the business practices. But I think it's also fair to say that Apple products are infected with spyware, malware, and all sorts of these issues far less frequently than their Microsoft counterparts that have a far more open architecture. And so I do think that Apple has a bit of an argument here. I just think that their business practices are monopolistic in behavior. Yeah. And so that's my problem with it. I agree with Epic on most of this stuff, which is, you know, Apple, you're taking a 30% haircut, you're not doing anything, and then you're also barring a lot of apps from, you know, advertising other ways to pay them. That's monopolistic, and you can't be kicking people off the platform for that.
Up next, we'll be playing trivia, and it is presidential in nature.
This is your home for the latest business and financial news in New England and around the country. This is the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
January is right around the corner, which means it's the perfect time for you to review your financial planning strategy. Hi, this is Chuck Zada from the Armstrong Advisory Group. The best time to put together a sound financial plan to take you through 2022 and beyond is right now, before the year ends. There are many steps you can take now, including examining your expenses to try to find opportunities to cut costs. You can also look at your insurance policies to see if you've truly got the best coverage, and you should write down your financial goals as they may have changed over the past year. This month, we've prepared a new guide called the Top 10 Year-End Tips, where we'll walk you through the process of putting together a financial plan that works for you next year and in the years to come. Get your free copy today by calling 800-393-4001. That's 800-393-4001. And you can also download the guide right now at armstrongadvisory.com.
Securities offered through Securities America Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC, and advisory services offered through Securities America Advisors Incorporated. Charles Zada, representative. Armstrong Advisory Group and the Securities America companies are unaffiliated.
Join our text club by texting the word Barry to 63566. Send your first and last name and get involved today. You're listening to the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
This segment of the Financial Exchange is brought to you in part by Caliber Home Loans Incorporated. Call Rick Betancourt, the VA guy, and take advantage of Caliber's user-friendly technology to provide you with the easiest, personalized mortgage experience from application to completion. Let Rick and Caliber Home Loans help secure your dream home. Call 978-979-0883 or visit them online at caliberhomeloans.com.
Rick Betancourt, MLS number 7810, state license, Massachusetts and Connecticut. Caliber Home Loans Incorporated, NMLS number 15622. www.mlsconsumeraccess.org, equal housing opportunity. Branch license number 1916762. 10 Elm Street, Danvers, Mass. 01923. All products are subject to credit and property approval. Other restrictions and limitations apply. Massachusetts mortgage lender and broker license number MC15622.
Trivia is brought to you by Southern Airways Express. Enjoy fall on Nantucket with Southern Airways Express. Book your flight today for a day trip or a long weekend with easy travel from Norwood, Providence, or New Bedford. Forget the ferry or Logan's hassles and high fares. The easiest way to Nantucket is on Southern Airways Express. Great service, low fares. Book today at iFlySouthern.com. What year marked the last time that a Republican candidate won the state of Massachusetts in a presidential election? If you know the answer, text your name and the keyword iFly to 63566. That's your first and last name and the keyword iFly to 63566. The ninth correct answer will win a $50 gas card and be automatically registered to win a pair of round-trip tickets to Nantucket on Southern Airways Express. We'll give those tickets away during Friday's program. What year marked the last time that a Republican candidate won the state of Massachusetts in a presidential election? Elon Musk, he just can't stay out of the news. Kind of like Donald Trump.
So he has been selling off some of his stock per a Twitter poll he did in order to, quote, pay the taxes that he owes.
What does he owe? $16
billion? Yeah, I don't keep track of.
But every time he sells it, he triggers more taxes.
Yeah, I mean, this is a bit of a gimmick. I'm not convinced that Well, actually, I am convinced that he planned on selling stock anyway, because he has to file his plans to sell stock as, you know, a major shareholder mm-hmm. with quarterly filings regularly. So he already had a plan in place to sell a bunch of his stock on a pre-scheduled spree. So this was not out of the blue. But yeah, I mean, one, there's a lot of different ways for an executive like this to pay their tax bills. In fact, frequently what they will do is just borrow on their stock to pay their tax bill rather than liquidating it, because far fewer tax consequences there. I think he wants to sell the stock. I mean, it's at near all-time highs again, and there's a big profit motivation to take some money off the table here.
Is Bernie Sanders still alive, though? That's what I wanted to know.
As far as I know, Bernie Sanders is still alive.
He is. Yes, yes. You're sure?
Yeah, in spite of Elon Musk's.
Well, I
did LOL when I saw Elon tweeted that back at him.
Yeah, he is funny. He's objectively pretty funny.
I thought his routine on SNL was particularly
good. Yeah, it was pretty good. Yeah. The weird thing about Tesla stock now, you know, it's a $1.04 trillion company. We used to talk about it all the time anyway, but there's no other $1 trillion companies that are as volatile as Tesla is. I mean, this thing's down 15% off of its most recent high back on November 4th.
How much of that do you attribute to his selling shares?
A big chunk of it. Yeah, a big chunk of it. And not just his selling the shares, but his announcing of his own, you know, selling shares plan and all of that.
But everybody knew he had to do that. So
to a smaller degree they did. But again, something.
If I knew, everybody knew.
Right, well, when you bury something in a filing about your stock's share prices compared to when you tweet it to all of your millions of followers, there is a very different impact in this day and age, especially with the retail investor. But you know, the stock's up another 3.33% today, and it is moving markets very substantially at this stage. Right? You know, the other day, Tesla was down big, and it brought down the NASDAQ and S&P to a significant level, whereas the Dow was up. So it's... the impact today compared to 3 years ago is pretty scary in some regards.
I consider Tesla to be a Peter Lynch stock. You remember? You guys don't remember Peter Lynch?
By what you know.
Well, and I met a lot of fellow Tesla owners that bought the car and then bought massive amounts of their stock.
Yep, because they're convinced that it was a success story. And yeah, we can all sit here and say it's crazy that Tesla is valued at more than the next 9 automakers. Again, just one more time here. Tesla is worth more than the next 9 automakers combined.
Right.
And what was that new company that just started? Rivian?
Rivian.
Rivian is
worth more than General Motors.
Worth more than General Motors. And we can all sit here and say,
they sold like 200 cars.
That's ludicrous. And in a lot of regards, it is. But the stock market... stock market doesn't care.
Well, it's kind of like when your neighbor sells their house and you see, oh my Lord, I can't believe they got $700,000 for that dump. But you know what? The market sets the price, right?
Right.
It's the same thing with stocks. Yep. Real estate, people are astounded at what housing prices are. But the market is what determines what the thing is worth. Speaking of worth, WeWork. Remember WeWork used to be like the cat's meow? This was the next Uber.
Dying to work there. I had people that I know that were so excited to take their job working for WeWork, not to mention, you know, taking the office space there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shocking news for you, Barry. They have losses in their first public report as a public company.
What I'm shocked, like I look at the amount of these losses and I'm like, what do you guys, it's almost as if they're renting space for $50 and selling it for $25.
Is that wrong?
No, is that not what we should be doing?
You look at the numbers, the math, it's mind-boggling.
So I'll debate you there, Barry. I don't think that is what's happening. I don't think that they are doing that to the same degree that they were when they were a public company or when they were a private company, where it's all just grow.
Yeah.
I now think that actually this is a company that is working towards profitability and trying to do so during a time when most people still don't want office space. So I think that's the real impact here, is we have a ton of leases. We own a bunch of real estate.
Let's share the numbers.
Okay.
Right? The net loss, $802 million.
Yep.
What was their revenue? Like about the same, wasn't it?
So in the first 9 months of the year, WeWork's operation consumed $1.5 billion of the cash. In the third quarter of this year, its operations used $380 million of cash. So what I read is they are losing a ton of money for the reason that I said. They are leasing very expensive properties in places like Manhattan and Boston. And right now, not enough people want to lease them. But as we are showing here, first 9 months of the year was significantly worse than the most recent quarter. So people are coming back and renting those properties. And I've maintained, like, WeWork has had a ton of problems over the last decade in terms of everything that they have done. But this is a business model that I think will succeed post-pandemic.
You do?
I do. I think that people want this type of flexibility, want to get the heck out of their homes when they work, and I think WeWork provides a unique place in that market, in spite of all of the problems that they've
what
had.
What makes it unique compared to their competitors?
I'll answer that later.
All right. And we'll have the answer to our trivia question in a few minutes.
The Financial Exchange is live on Facebook, so make sure to like our page and watch the guys break down the latest on the markets every day beginning at 10 on the Financial Exchange Radio Network. Financial news, business news, entertainment. If you don't think they all go together, you need to listen to our brand new podcast called Dumb Questions for Smart Money, presented by the Financial Exchange Radio Network. Subscribe today on Apple, Spotify, and all your favorite podcast apps.
In the 1984 presidential election, Ronald Reagan won 49 of 50 states and 525 of the 538 electoral votes against Walter Mondale, the most of any presidential candidate in American history, en route to re-election for a second term. No Republican candidate has since won Massachusetts, New York, Washington, Oregon, Rhode Island, or Hawaii since.
And Don from Nashua, New Hampshire, knew the answer to that somewhat easy question. Congratulations, Don. You're taking home a $50 gas card. You're also registered to win the pair of round-trip tickets to Nantucket on Southern Airways Express. We're giving those away this Friday, so do tune in. Trivia is brought to you by Southern Airways Express. You can enjoy fall on Nantucket with Southern Airways Express. Book your flight today for a day trip or a long weekend. With easy travel from Norwood, Providence, or New Bedford, forget the ferry or Logan's hassles and high fares. The easiest way to Nantucket is on Southern Airways Express. Great service, low fares. Book today at iFlySouthern.com.
Does anybody drink, like, cow's milk anymore? Or is it just all almond milk, soy milk, oat milk?
I had a couple sips the other day of regular old milk.
Oh, my God, Tucker. Yeah, but how was it?
I forgot what it tasted like, to be honest, because I've just been drinking so much oat milk and almond milk.
What do you feed your son, though?
Milk. Whole milk.
Coal milk. Or cow milk?
Yeah, cold, too. Yeah.
Cow milk.
Cow milk. Yeah. Well, because you have to define it now.
Yeah.
Right? You can't just say milk, right? You go in anybody's refrigerator, and they're, you know.
No, I mean, I want to give my kid regular old milk, you know, get those bones strong and get them tall and everything like that.
What the pediatrician recommends?
Yeah.
It is?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Or in the,
what my pediatrician recommended.
So what's all the other stuff like oatmeal.
Dairy alternatives, a little bit healthier, you know, just a little bit.
It is,
yeah, less fatty, you know,
yeah,
less sugar,
less nutritious, less fatty, less sugar. Allegedly, I think the big argument that these producers make is the same one that the fake meat producers make, which is less environmentally impactful. I think that one's much more clear, especially on the milk side of things where you're, I mean, I think the process to make oat milk, correct me, somebody can text me in if I'm wrong here, but I think you just soak a bunch of oats in water.
No. Chuck told me you had to milk the oats.
Oh, okay. Barry, I think that Chuck might have been messing with you.
Yes.
No.
He wouldn't do that.
You're right. So, fairly simple process here. Obviously, these things have taken off. My concern with this company, with
Oatly.
Oatly in particular, Beyond Meat, Impossible Foods, and any of these other companies is, look, I genuinely believe that they have a future. I actually really like the taste of oat milk. I'm having it in my coffee right now. I think it just tastes good, which is the main reason that I drink it. I also have a pretty serious cholesterol problem, and I'm hoping that that might help out with that a little bit.
maybe the cheese in your house you should get rid of.
Shut up, Barry.
Is there sausage. Oat cheese? Is that available for Mike?
No. I'm not doing that.
Almond cheese?
So I'm willing to go through the least amount of effort possible, and replacing the regular milk with oat milk in my coffee is literally the least I could do to address my cholesterol problems. But my problem with all of these companies is that when you look at them, their valuations are not the same as just a regular old milk producer, which I think they should be. Like, there's not going to suddenly create this entirely new market for
they have a different growth trajectory. Right. Wouldn't you kind of like the tech stocks, right? You pay a premium for them because they're going to grow at 25% a year.
They do have a different growth trajectory. I think that those growth trajectories have been way overestimated and way overstated by every stretch of the imagination. They have a very expensive premium product here. It's more than twice the cost of a gallon of milk.
Oh, what is it?
It's very, very pricey. And so, look, they have a future. I think that they are on a faster growth trajectory. But these valuations that are looking at them like a tech company, I think, are preposterous. Mm-hmm. They don't have that type of growth trajectory. You produce food items that get sold in the grocery stores. And guess what? Your magic formula for oat milk is not as difficult to replicate as Google's formula for selling ads and Facebook's formula for, catching eyes on their platform. Right. And so it took how early on did you first notice things like oat milk in particular on the shelves, Tucker? Like 2 years ago?
Oat milk, yeah. Well, almond milk has been around.
Almond milk has been around for a while, but oat milk in particular, I think, was a couple of years ago. It took like 3 months before there were five different competitors on the shelves. Oh. Wegmans has their own brand, and everybody has their own. I think
Chobani has.
Chobani, oh, yeah. I'm drinking Chobani oat milk right now.
Oh, good, that's point. What it is. Yeah.
Look, there's no barriers to entry. It's an interesting idea. I don't think these companies are worth nearly what everybody is still willing to pay for them. Oatly, by the way, their shares are down, 20% today on milk production. How do you have production issues? You literally just soak oats in a vat of water. That's the simplest production process that I've ever heard.
The supply chain, Mike.
I know Barry still believes that you have to milk the oats in some weird fashion, but I promise that's not how it works.
Well, you have to remember to ask Chuck tomorrow. Right. He would
yes. Lie to me. Yeah, he would definitely know. Folks, losing money on investment can actually be beneficial to your overall financial strategy. Saying that a bit tongue-in-cheek, but tax loss harvesting occurs when investment loss helps you reduce your tax liability by offsetting gains or income. Understanding this process and many others is what we detail in our new guide out this month. It's called the Top 10 Tips for Year End. And we go through this, fairly basic one in terms of tax loss harvesting, as well as some that people don't think about. So, you've got your basics. You need to get the tax loss harvesting, the charitable donations, the required distributions, all done before year end. But we go through 10 items in total that I think are really important to look at around year end. One would be budgeting and bill payment. This day and age, I don't know anybody that still receives bills in the mail and pays them by check. Very few and far between. We've all got these auto debits from our bank account, which makes life very simple and very convenient, but nobody actually tracks all of them. And so we go through this guide and 10 different ways that you can really take a look at your financial well-being, including the basics like tax loss harvesting, but some things that people don't frequently think about in order to get yourself in a good position financially for 2022. You can get a copy of this guide by calling 800-393-4001. Again, the number is 800-393-4001. It's our top 10 year-end tips guide, available only during the month of November. Again, that number is 800-393-4001, or you can download it right now from armstrongadvisory.com.
Securities offered through Securities America Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC, and advisory services offered through Securities America Advisors Incorporated. Michael Armstrong, representative. Armstrong Advisory Group and the Securities America companies are unaffiliated.
Tyson Foods reported a jump in sales after sharply raising prices for its beef, chicken, and pork, citing growing costs the company said were likely to persist. Tyson Foods, I have to give them credit. They
make the most disgusting frozen chicken nuggets that if any grocery store out there. Is that what you're going to credit them
for? No. What I admire them for is their stance on vaccines. They got 96% of their workers vaccinated, and they did so in many states that were resistant to vaccinations. But the people that worked at those places decided it was more important to keep their jobs than to remaining unvaccinated.
So beyond vaccine status of their employees, you are seeing price. I don't think anybody's surprised by this. Meat prices are getting way more expensive.
They sure are.
Tyson is playing a big, big role in that. They claim, anyway, that their logistics expenses jumped 30% most recently in the most recent quarter. Cost of cattle jumped by a fifth year over year, and they are facing increased prices. There's no doubt about it. But what I think is also happening behind, or at least I hope that this is happening for Tyson shareholders, is that Tyson has a once in a very long period of time opportunity here to raise prices on consumers, right, and they will pay. And right, I think that Tyson is doing that, as they're saying, look, we've got these price increases. Look, our logistics prices are up 30%, our logistics costs are up 30%. So we are raising prices. And I think you're going to see that in the coming quarters, that yes, input costs are up, but look how much we drove additional profit to the business because we raised prices more than our logistics costs are up. I'm not concerned about Tyson dealing with, I'd be concerned if a flu swept through the cattle population, if they were facing such severe supply chain issues that they couldn't get product to market. Nothing about this report indicates that to me.
Nope.
It just indicates that it's going to be more expensive and Tyson's going to profit.
Well, and they're going down market, right? Because what they're doing is they're saying, we recognize that people aren't going to buy as much very lean hamburger as they used to. They're not going to buy as many steaks as they used to, and they're producing accordingly, right? They're going to produce a lot more chicken.
And like Walmart, occupies that strategic place where people will go to them because they look at them as the discount provider. Same goes for Tyson.
Yeah.
If people feel costs are up, they're going to spend more on a place like Tyson Foods than they will on the Whole Foods chicken that they have in the at the aisle.
Some of you may be getting ready for Thanksgiving as well. You should. Where do you find these 3-pound peanut butter cup pies? We'll talk about it when we return.
And Mark Schaefer from Financial Planning Tuesday coming on.
Right, that's important too. But honestly, the peanut butter.
We're burying the lead here. Yeah,
the peanut butter pie is like, I love Mark, but peanut butter pie.
Sure, fair.
Right, yeah. Next.
Business and financial news affecting the markets and your wallet. We got it all straight from Wall Street right here on the Financial Exchange Radio Network. One of the toughest conversations you can have with your family is about legacy planning. The plan for your future is incredibly important, but if not done properly, can cause numerous problems. Instinctively, you probably want to leave your assets to your children, but that may not always be the best course of action, especially if the kids have financial difficulties or are in the midst of a divorce. The best way to make sure they're taken care of and avoiding major tax consequences is by calling Cushing & Dolan, the experts in elder law and estate planning. They've got a brand new guide out for November called The Do's and Don'ts of Gifting Assets. Call 866-848-5699 and get this free guide today. In it, you'll learn about information related to the gifting process, what tax issues may arise from a significant gift like a home or a vacation property, and what happens to the asset if a child has creditor issues. Call 866-848-5699. That's 866-848-5699. Or download the guide right now from their website, LegalExchangeShow.com. That's LegalExchangeShow.com. If you missed any part of today's show, not to worry. Go to financialexchangeshow.com and click listen. Then click on demand and catch up on every segment. You'll also find podcasts of all of our full shows. Just punch up that listen button at financialexchangeshow.com.
Joining us now is Mark Schaefer, certified financial planner with the Armstrong Advisory Group, who's going to be updating us on a number of tax-related changes coming to 2022. I know we said that it's unlikely that the Biden tax plan is going to be passed at this stage, or at least anything significant, but there are a number of changes to everything from 401k, contribution limits, standard deductions, etc., and all of that is equally important in a lot of ways. So, Mark, thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Before we get started, I just want to say something to Barry. I love you, too.
Mm-hmm.
I've been second fiddle to many things in my life, but never peanut butter pie. That takes the cake. Get it? Cake pie.
Yeah, right, that's good. That's good. So talk to me, Mark, about retirement accounts first. We always look at these contribution limits. I understand that they are changing. Talk to me about if you have a workplace retirement plan versus just a traditional IRA or Roth.
Correct. So one of the good things about inflation, if there's anything good, is that some of these things are increasing. So, for example, 401k maximum contributions for 2021 this year is $19,500. That's increasing to $20,500. So you could put an extra $1,000 in if you're under 50. If you're over 50 years old, that catch-up has not changed. It's still $6,500. So for if you're under 50, $19,500 this year, $20,500 next year. If you're over 50, $26,000 this year, $27,000 next year. And what most people, well, I shouldn't say most people, some people, what I see, forget to change their contribution percentages online, you know, for your, so if you are putting in the maximum currently, just make sure that you'll still take advantage of the maximum next year. And you may need to change your contribution percentage, you know, through your workplace online system. IRAs are not changing. So that hasn't actually changed since 2019. But 2019 was the last time we got a bump in what we could put into IRAs and Roth IRAs.
This is this piece to me, Mark, is the most frustrating piece that I have harped on year after year after year, is that if you're part of a 401k through a large employer, you can put in nearly four times the amount that you can fund into an IRA if your employer doesn't offer a workplace retirement plan. I don't know if this is, you know, the Fidelities of the world that just have a grasp on the lobbying arm of the IRS, or if it is an incentive to get small employers to open 401k plans. But it strikes me to be absolutely ludicrous when half of the nation's employees work for small companies
or are self-employed.
Right.
That's a great debate to have.
Call your congressman,
I
guess.
Answer, but I don't.
What else is changing? Talk to me about the tax brackets themselves. Are we seeing some movement there?
We have. It's not major. So for a married filing jointly couple, you were making $81,000 or less as adjusted gross income or taxable income, I should say, you're in the 22% bracket this year. Now you can make up to $83,500, and the 24% bracket was 172 going to 178. Those aren't major changes. But one thing I want to mention about taxes that may be of interest to your listeners is over the last 40 years, from 1982, last time when Reagan was president, there were before when the Trump administration overhauled the tax code a couple of years ago. The last time there was major tax change legislation was back in, I think it was 84, when Reagan was president. So from 1982 to today, the average inflation rate in the U.S. was 2.7%. And I'm getting to a point here regarding taxes.
I believe you.
So today, if I'm making $174,000, that's like making $60,000 in 1982, inflation adjusted. Right now, talking about these brackets, if I'm in married filing jointly, I should say, making $174,000 taxable income, I'm in the 22% bracket, which is the same thing as making $60,000 in 1982. The tax bracket was 49%. You were paying almost half your pay in taxes
The same inflation-adjusted salary.
So tax rates are historically low. And you know, take advantage of some of these increases. You know, put more money away is great. You may want to consider foregoing a tax deduction, maybe putting into a Roth IRA and not saving 22%, because if taxes go back to 49%, you know, it'll be tax free coming out. So talk to your tax advisors and your financial planners about tax planning, which is, you know, in addition to, you know, what am I going to currently pay this year, do some long-range projections, you know, as far as your tax planning. One last thing, gift tax exclusions. You can give $15,000 away, right, every year without having a gift tax
receipt.
Yep. return to prepare. Next year, it's going to 16,000. A lot of people ask me about that.
Mark Schaefer from the Armstrong Advisory Group joining us to discuss the many tax changes being applied for 2022. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
So just going back to that peanut butter pie story, there were 3,000 of these pies made available by Reese's. They sold for $44. They sold out yesterday in 2 hours.
Less than two hours.
However, I have found an alternative source for you to purchase. Yes, I have. I went to eBay, and you can buy one of these peanut butter pies, Reese's peanut butter pies, for $262.
Seems like a bargain.
Well, you that's a good investment. That's better than Tesla stock.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You buy it yesterday for $45. You sell it today for $262.
Heck of a deal. Should have bought a dozen.
I missed out.
It's 3.25 pounds, by the way.
I got to tell you, Barry, this is the most surprising news of the year that you didn't see this before it happened.
I know. I've let myself down. Hey, we'll be back tomorrow with another edition of the Financial Exchange. Stay warm. We'll see you in the morning.